Welcome to The Extra, the show that connects you to the issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And today, our guest here on The Extra, we're pleased to have him every couple of months, Colorado Springs Mayor John Suthers. Welcome to the show, Mayor Suthers.
Good morning, Shannon. How are you today?
Doing just fine, although what a change in weather that we had over the weekend. I mean, it was shorts weather Saturday.
Chilly. Yeah. Yeah, a little chilly.
Yeah, we went from one extreme to the next. At least that does help with our fire conditions and fire risks, though. But let's talk about a big issue that's coming up in Colorado Springs, and we're talking about the deadline to get your ballots returned for the election 2021. There are a couple of issues that are of prime importance to the city of Colorado Springs. One is Measure 2C. That is an important measure, but also I think 2D will definitely impact the bottom line. So I'm going to let you talk about both of them.
Okay. Let's start with 2C. Shannon, when I became the mayor of Colorado Springs in 2015, my predecessor, Steve Bach, had really, over the previous several years, had done a pretty serious scrub of the city budget, looking for, more revenue, could we outsource things, all that sort of thing. He had a committee, the Citizens Committee, to look at our whole budget. When I met with Steve in the transition, it was pretty obvious to me that the city over a 25-year period had developed a revenue problem. We had done away with a 1/2 cent infrastructure sales tax in the early 90s. We had done away with a stormwater fee in 2009. Our roads were terrible. 60% of our roads were in bad condition. And our stormwater situation, we were in all kinds of litigation, being sued by the federal government, the state of Colorado, downstream neighbors, including of Pueblo, for underfunding our stormwater system. And, of course, there's legal obligations associated there. The other issue was, in 2015, we were still emerging from a recession. In the recession, we had cut the parks budget dramatically. It went down the general fund, which had been about $20 million before, went down into single digits. But the hope was, we would build it back, and we have built it back to about $17 million. But the problem has been not just in the parks category, has been the growth of the community and increasing demand. Through the cooperation of the voters, we've solved our road problem. We're now keeping pace with road improvements. We are well on our way to having the best stormwater system in Colorado. But without something different, I don't see us getting on top of the parks issue. And let me describe exactly what it is. With TOPS, Trails and Open Space, which was passed in 1997, we've done a pretty good job of open space acquisition, and of course through a developer donation of either land or fees, we've done a pretty good job of park land acquisition. But we have not been able to generate the general fund to develop those parks. So to this day, we have about 12 undeveloped parks, and five of them are community parks, which are larger ones, and the rest of them are neighborhood parks. And they're very expensive to develop. To give you an example, Venezia Park, which I think a lot of people know about in the Northeast, that was $15 million to develop that park with all the artificial turf playing fields, pickleball tennis, all that sort of thing, spray ground, all that sort of thing. $8.5 million we're spending down in Panorama Park down in the Southeast. And then we simply have not kept up with the maintenance of parks. And, we've got unusable basketball courts, tennis courts, and things like that. So TOPS is coming up for renewal, and there's a lot of back and forth. The parks advocates wanted, to go for like three times what we had now. And we reached a compromise that we would ask to go from 1 cent per $10 purchase to 2 cents per $10 purchase, but also give us more flexibility. We'll spend the same or more in open space acquisition, I think probably a little bit more. But we will have more flexibility in terms of park development and maintenance of all three, parks, open space, and trails. And that's what 2C is all about. And so I would encourage people, if they haven't voted yet, please seriously consider 2C. In 6.5 years, if it passes, we will have really fixed all of our revenue shortfalls.
Now, Mayor, when you're talking about a funding measure like this, is there a certain percentage of voter turnout that you need to reach, or is it simple majority in terms of whether or not this thing will pass?
It's a majority of everybody who votes. So if it's a low turnout, you still got to have...
I think we may need to tap dance here. I think Mayor Souther's phone just disconnected, unfortunately. Let's take a short break right now. We'll be back with more of The Extra. Hopefully we'll hear back from the mayor in just a moment. Welcome back to The Extra, and we've reestablished our connection with Colorado Springs Mayor John Southers, who was just explaining what it's going to take for Measure 2C to prevail. Again, that would provide money for the Trails and Open Spaces program. So, Mayor Southers, first of all, why don't you continue with your train of thought as to this is a simple majority vote that will ensure passage, correct?
That's exactly right, except for a few situations in the state amending the Constitution. It's always just a simple majority of those that vote. In the case of the state Constitution, you need 55% of those that vote. But so it's a simple majority, and I think I was explaining, I don't know exactly when I got cut off, that low turnout elections, you get a little more informed voter. High turnout elections, you get people that love parks. So we'll see. We'll know in 48 hours.
Right. And what would you like to say to people, just bottom line, on this measure?
I've been very thoughtful and methodical in terms of approaching some of the revenue deficits that the city of Colorado Springs had. And what I'm most proud of is, even if this passes, in 6.5 years, we will have overcome the three areas where we had revenue problems: streets, stormwater, and parks. And yet, we will still, the per capita tax burden of a resident of city of Colorado Springs will be a third or less of the average tax burden of the 100 largest cities in America. And I think that shows that we've been pretty careful making sure we're talking about essential government services. This is not something that the private sector can do. These are things that only the government can do. And I feel like we've, as I say, been very thoughtful about it.
And in the meantime, we are also facing a decision on Measure 2D. And this is something that is related to money that taxpayers would get back in terms of the Tabor refunds, I guess is what you call
That's
them.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
But the city is proposing something. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me explain that situation. First of all, I would encourage all your listeners to understand, Colorado Springs is one of the maybe the only large city in America in Colorado that has not detabored. So we respect the taxpayer bill of rights, which all tax measures go to the voters. Secondly, our growth is limited to a formula, and it's typically 3% a year of allowed growth. If we have any revenue growth over that, we have to ask the voters to keep it, or it's refunded, and it's typically refunded through your utility bill. That's the simplest way to do it, to include for sales tax, because it includes non-property owners. And this year, because the economy is good, we're going to have a fairly significant Tabor excess. We think it's going to be $30 million or more. The Wildland fire has always been an issue in Colorado Springs. So when I was growing up here, I remember my father and mother telling me about a wildland fire in 1950, January of 1950, that almost burned down Fort Carson, burnt the whole east southeastern side of Cheyenne Mountain, and almost burned the Broadmoor. 11 people died in that fire. And then, of course, in the modern era, we've had the Waldo Canyon fire, the Black Forest fire. And so it's not a question of if there'll be another wildland fire. There's a question of where and when and how well prepared we'll be. We have, over the last several years, applied for and received grant money for wildland fire mitigation. And a lot of people are familiar with some of the programs in the what we call the WUI, the Wildland Urban Interface.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And we've done mitigation efforts around Palmer Park and all areas of the city. There's some legislation in Colorado this last session that allows cities to form taxing districts where areas can be taxed to support wildland fire mitigation. The council and I think we have a better and more creative solution, and that's without a tax, allow us to keep $20 million of this year's Tabor excess and set up a dedicated wildland fire mitigation fund that would be directed by the Colorado Springs Fire Department with the assistance of a citizen advisory committee. And we could spend up to, it would draw interest, you know, it'd be put in the bank, draw interest, and we could spend up to 5% of the balance each year, of the balance of the corpus each year on fire mitigation. So that would be typically, you know, at least $1 million. And that would add to, you know, the couple of $100,000 we're spending now, and we could do, you know, instead of mitigating a couple thousand acres a year, we could get to 8,000 to 10,000 acres a year, and I think do a much better job. And we know, Shannon, that mitigation works because we saw it in the case of the Bear Creek fire in, what was that, about a year ago?
Right, right. Or was it 2 years? But anyway,
it was November of 20.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And you know, the fire started in areas that had been mitigated, and we were able to get it out without any loss, significant loss to property, and no homes burned down, and all that sort of thing. So we know it works, and I think it's a creative way to deal with this situation. And it could be done. The mitigation could be done with trees, grasslands, any place in the city of Colorado Springs, or if the fire department thought it prudent, we could actually go into areas adjacent to the boundaries in order to protect property and people in Colorado Springs. And what is foreseen there is cooperative efforts with the U.S. Forest Service, because if you mitigate to the Forest Service line where the city actually abuts the National Forest Service, the National Forest, it doesn't do you any good if you haven't, you know, mitigated on both sides. Mm-hmm. So that's what 2D is all about, and we'll see how the voters respond to that.
And this would be a one-time only clawback.
That's right.
Of those.
Yeah. You know, if the return on investment is less than 5%, which it probably will be, because under government accounting standards, governments can't put the money in equities and stuff like that. So it will slowly decrease over time. But what I would foresee that at some point in the next 20 years, we might have another Tabor retention to put to restore the fund.
Right. And in terms of this, this isn't a major amount of money that would be coming to the average homeowner, right? Is there an average
amount?
No,
it really isn't. When you spread out dollars, I think, by the way, anything over that, so we're anticipating at least $30 million, and so if it's 10 or more over that $20 million, we will be refunding that. But, you know, I think we're probably talking $50, $60 a household, something like that.
And again, this is a simple majority vote will change this, or does this require
That's
more?
Correct.
Okay.
No, that's a simple majority.
All right. Well, and again, we should mention to the folks, you have until 7 p.m. tomorrow night to get those ballots returned, whichever way you want to vote. There are also two other local... I was going to say...
let me put a caution there. Don't mail it.
Don't mail it. Right.
We're too late to mail.
Right. They so need. I was going to go on to that.
Time, yeah. Yeah. Drop it off at a ballot box before 7 p.m. tomorrow night.
Right. And there are some polling places that are open as well. In fact, I think five new polling places just opened up for voters. If you have questions or would like to turn them in person, again, you can go to the El Paso County Clerk and Recorder's website to find out more on that. We have more to discuss, though, with Colorado Springs Mayor John Suthers. When we come back, we'll talk about the COVID situation. After what had seemed to be subsiding numbers in El Paso County, now we're seeing those numbers climb. And I know the mayor is only in control of what happens in the city, but definitely we'll want to be asking about the response and where this is heading with him. That's when we come back here on The Extra. We're back with Colorado Springs Mayor John Suthers. And Mayor Suthers, just moments ago we were talking about wildfire mitigation, and you referenced that wildfire near Bear Creek Park. And it, for a while there, it felt like it had been so long ago. And I think the pandemic has really distorted our perception of time, at least it has for me, because it feels like some things have just been stretched out so long. We've been talking about the pandemic for so long. It felt like we were entering into an easier time with the pandemic, but El Paso County has suddenly taken on a really difficult hue in terms of the hot spots. We're bright red right now with hospitalizations up 17% over the last 2 weeks is what we were reporting, and definitely prompting the governor just over the weekend to institute a new state of emergency order that affects hospitals and how they can treat patients. So this has to be concerning to you as the mayor of one of the largest cities in a very populous county.
Very much so, Shannon, and sadly enough, in my view, it is wholly preventable. The fact that we have higher numbers in El Paso County, I think, is a reflection of we have lower numbers when it comes to vaccination than the state average. The correlations nationally and in our state could not be more clear. People who are unvaccinated account for the vast majority of serious illness from COVID-19 that need to be hospitalized and who are dying, and we still have quite a number of people dying. I think as of this morning, I think I heard on your news, it was just short of 80% of the people in the hospital are unvaccinated, and it's a higher percentage that are dying. People that are vaccinated that need to be hospitalized or who die tend to be quite old. You know, Colin Powell type situation in your 80s with some other sort of problem. But the younger people that are in the hospital are almost entirely unvaccinated. So what's sad to me is it could be prevented. I don't, you know, I understand how strongly and emotionally people feel that who don't want to get vaccinated, but it's not quite something that I grasp given the data nationally and statewide and locally that show a clear correlation between getting vaccinated and your susceptibility to being sick enough to go to the hospital.
Right. I think the average age of death of, or maybe it was hospitalization, that is among the unvaccinated is 79. Among the vaccinated, or unvaccinated, excuse me, 59. Among the vaccinated, it's 79.
Right.
So there's a clear difference in age groups that are ending up in the hospital with these serious complications that could turn fatal.
Absolutely. As I say, if you're vaccinated and you're ill enough to go to the hospital, you're probably around 80, and that's what you would indicate if the average age is 79. Whereas we've got younger people, unvaccinated people in the hospital, and as I say, it's preventable, and I find it very sad. I have always, you know, I saw a letter in the newspaper this morning saying, you know, Mayor, get off your duff and order everybody to either be vaccinated or get a mask and things like that. I will, as of today, all employees of the city of Colorado Springs, if they do not show they're vaccinated, have to wear a mask. We decided, and it was a, you know, I got together all my department heads and talked about what we should or should not do. We decided not to require vaccinations. But if you're unvaccinated or you don't want to disclose your vaccination status, then you do have to wear a mask. That was effective in the fire department a month ago, and in the police department, I think the mid-month, and now the entire city. But I have said from the beginning, for the most part, in terms of any type of city mandates, I'm going to citywide mandates. I'm going to listen to the health experts, and if the state health department, through the governor, mandates statewide, then obviously I will urge all our citizens to comply. If the local health department issues a mandate, I'll urge our citizens to comply. But I am not, as the mayor of Colorado Springs, absent directive from health experts, going to order either vaccinations or everybody wear masks. As you know, a lot of private companies, a lot of businesses are requiring masks, and they have every right to do so. And a lot of companies are requiring vaccinations, and I think the courts will determine they have the right to do so.
Right. So far, it's been going on the side of the companies that have been requiring that, at least in other states that have gone that far.
Yeah, Shannon, let me, a lot of people, it's fascinating to me, a lot of people seem to think, oh, the government's never mandated us to do this sort of thing before. We have, as part of the sesquicentennial of Colorado Springs, we have a exhibit of historical documents on the wall in the lobby area of the city administration building, and I was looking at them the other day, and there's an 1886 document in which everybody's being required to quarantine as a result of a particular virulent flu disease at the time. So this is not new, and the reasons why our statutes allow governors to do that is they've been in there at least since the flu epidemic in 1917 and 18. So this notion that is so foreign that government can, in the interests of health, do health-related orders, that's just not the case. It's been going on for well over a century.
And certainly the research on mask wearing has, this is why in hospitals, the health staff will wear masks absent the COVID virus.
That's
because,
right.
Because the research is there that supports the efficacy of wearing masks. And, you know, certainly there have been other Colorado counties that are talking about maybe bringing back onto the table a mask mandate. How detrimental do you think that would be to El Paso County's and Colorado Springs' relative economic plateauing? And definitely we're feeling positives about the economy right now. Do you think that that would have an impact on it if we were to go back to it?
I don't. I think maybe a vaccine mandate would, if you know, excluded people that weren't vaccinated or something like that. I don't think a mask mandate was. You know, I went to a Bronco game yesterday and got on the RTD at a Littleton station after we had lunch, and went in, and everybody on the RTD had to have masks on, and everybody grabbed a mask out of their pocket and put it on, and you know, that's what they did. And I think people adjusted those things. You know, I understand some people think that's a deprivation of their liberty and all that sort of thing, but I think largely people are complying with mask mandates.
Well, we certainly would like to see those numbers turn around. And if it gets much worse, we'll probably be facing something like that. We'll have to see. We are going to continue the conversation with Colorado Springs Mayor John Suthers. When we come back, we'll talk about road work ahead of the winter season, how the 2C projects are doing, as well as Spacecom. Whether it will look like it's going to relocate or whether the efforts to keep it here in the Colorado Springs area have been successful or are seeing signs that maybe there could be a brighter outcome for that. That's coming up as The Extra continues. Keep on listening to KRDO News Radio. Welcome back to The Extra. Our guest today, Mayor John Suthers. So before we get to road projects and how 2C is turning our tax dollars into hopefully more pavement, more smoother pavement out there, let's talk about meantime Spacecom, because I don't know if it's just the power of positive thinking, but I think a lot of people at every level of leadership have been talking about ways that decision to relocate Spacecom to Alabama can be reviewed and perhaps reversed. What is the status as you know it right now?
Well, the battle has largely moved to Congress and the White House. I've spent quite a few days in Washington, D.C., in meetings with both senators on both sides of the aisle. A city has hired their state lobbyists to lobby this on a federal level. We have a very, very good lobbying firm, and they've set up a lot of meetings for us. A couple of things have happened that I think are very revealing. Number one, about a month ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, the governor or the former President Trump was in Alabama, and he's on a radio show. And he basically said in response to a question that you do understand, Alabamans, that I was single-handedly responsible for this decision. It wasn't the Air Force decision. It was my decision. That, of course, is what we have contended all along, that it was not a merit-based decision, that it was a political decision to pay off the Alabama delegation who had all voted not to recognize the electoral vote. And in particular, there's two politicians, Mo Brooks, the congressman from Huntsville, and Tommy Tuberville, the newly elected senator that Trump had campaigned for in Alabama, who right after the decision said, well, he promised us that he would do it. And then, of course, the more sophisticated Richard Shelby, longtime senator, said, oh, no, this is a merit-based thing. We know that Tuberville and Mo Brooks went to an organizational meeting for the January 6th rally in December, and that Brooks was asked by the president to be his warm-up act. And that matter's under investigation, and it will be interesting to see how involved Brooks was in the organizational efforts. People that were involved in the storming of the Capitol said that he and his staff were very involved. There are two investigations going on, one by the Inspector General of the Department of Defense, who I think will be oriented towards the Air Force process here and whether or not they did what they should have done in terms of getting to a merit-based decision. And then there's an investigation by Office of Management and Budget who will look at whether there's proper estimates of the cost. And one of my meetings in Washington, D.C. was with a senior counsel for the Senate Armed Services Committee, who's very familiar with the whole situation, visits Colorado Springs all the time, visits Huntsville all the time. And he said the estimate that it would cost $1 billion to set up the infrastructure, the security infrastructure in Huntsville that Colorado Springs has, he says that is underestimated by at least three times. He believes it would be at least $3 billion. So that sort of information, of course, we're gonna pursue it. We hope that we'll get the attention of the White House. Certainly, President Biden hasn't been reluctant to overturn some other decisions made by the previous administration. So we'll see. We anticipate that the two investigations will reports will come out, sometime after the first of the year. Now, if they say, oh gosh, this is a merit-based deal, then that probably won't be good for us. But if one or both of them say there's some serious issues here, I think that will be good for us.
And would it then have to go to those committees that,
Well, it's still ultimately the administration's decision. Typically, BRAC decisions have been either by a congressional appointed or presidentially appointed BRAC commission. But Shannon, I knew what was going on. I met with President Trump twice out here for brief periods of time in 2020, when he was out here for a rally, and the other time in late 2019 he was out here for the Air Force Academy graduation. He told me right then, I'm going to make the decision myself, and it's going to be after the 2020 election. So we knew it was likely going to be a political decision at that point.
Well, you had my attention at $3 billion for the cost of just setting up the communications infrastructure, the security infrastructure. That's a sizable figure and not one to be undertaken lightly. So hopefully the decision makers will look at that.
You bet.
Other issues.
The way the Biden administration is throwing around money today, $3 billion sounds like a drop in the bucket. But I think when we get down the road, and people are paying more attention to the defense budget, I think the cost of the move is going to become more and more significant.
Yeah. Well, speaking of saving money by spending money, because really that's what this is all about. Do see the project, the measure that has brought money to help road work so that we don't end up with worse problems down the line. Those projects continue to get completed and get underway. So tell us where we stand as we head into the winter season.
Yeah, we just shut down paving probably in the last couple of weeks for the winter season. You can't pave in cold weather. I had another great year. I think our total lane miles were about, I think, a little less than 200, which is a little less than years before. But the reason is because we're half in residential neighborhoods. And interestingly enough, it's more expensive to pave in residential neighborhoods than it is in long straightaways. And I think people will understand it if you think about, it's a little more complicated to get in and out and do all the turns and all the things that have to be done in a residential neighborhood and all the curb cuts and all that sort of thing. But we did a couple of very high-profile streets that I very much enjoy driving on, Briargate Boulevard and InterQuest, including the ramps off of I-25. So we got a lot of major projects done, but also got some residential. And I feel, we're over 1,300 miles now on 2C, and we haven't got to everybody, and I tend to find out that if they haven't fixed your street, then you don't think we're doing anything. But the fact of the matter is we've done a tremendous amount, and I think the vast majority of people recognize that.
Well, and certainly you post it often on your website when there are, on the city's website, when there are projects going on, so people can verify it there if they'd like to find out their own information. Mayor, we have to wrap up right now. Just one final, I guess, shout out to the folks who still have their ballots have yet to be turned in.
Yeah, you need to turn them in personally by 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Do not mail them, because if you mail them today, they probably will not get there. So, by all means, exercise your civil right and civil responsibility to vote.
Mayor Southers, always a pleasure to talk to you and to get the word out about important city business and issues that are affecting all of us living in Colorado Springs. Thank you.
Thank you, Shannon. Bye-bye.
KRDO News Time, 9:58. You've been listening to The Extra.